Welcome to War Gaming Recon. I'm your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to this very special episode, as every episode is very special, because things we do here are interesting, or at least I think so, and presumably you do as well, because you're tuning into us. Today we have a really cool guest joining us, and his name is Alex Tabb, and Alex is coming on for many, many reasons. But most importantly for all of you is that he is a very old friend of my buddy and former co-host, Adrian Benson, who, as you probably know, had passed away about a year ago. And so we're going to talk about some old school gaming. We're going to go back in time, hop in the DeLorean, or whatever your preferred method of time travel. We're going to talk about some early days of gaming and share some memories of gaming with Adrian, both Alex's and my own, some funny stories, things that maybe I've alluded to on the podcast in the past and said, I can't share that. Some of that's getting shared now. So I'm going to do a little bit of a dive into that, everyone. And I hope you'll join me right now in welcoming the one and only Alex. Alex, how are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
I am so happy to have you on here. I know every podcast probably would say this, but we've tried doing this for a while, and I'm glad we've got in our schedules to work. Scheduling's tricky, right? To try to do anything in life.
It's not simple. The older you get, the more stuff gets in the way. So it's a pleasure. I'm glad we're able to make it work.
Now, you might think, how is this going to connect to anything? But I don't know about you, but I find like in my younger days, it was so much easier to schedule stuff, such as like if I wanted to play games or whatever, I would have, say, a set gaming night where no matter what, this is what I'm going to do. Or if I just wanted to get together with friends and play something or go see a movie or whatever,
right? At the time, were you married? Did you have kids?
No, of course, before kids, before house, before marriage, before any of that adulting kind of stuff.
No, exactly. When I was 22, I had no responsibilities whatsoever. I could do whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Life was easy.
So easy. And you don't even realize at the time. You think it's so hard because you're all angsty in the middle of things.
Yeah, your head's up your butt. You don't know what the hell's going on.
No, you have no idea. And you're just like, life is so hard. How am I going to do it? Not to minimize the trials and, tribulations, but like when it comes to this kind of stuff, you just go and faff off and do whatever the heck you want to do and you're fine.
No, I remember being younger and like I would want to set up a game and I'd leave it out for 3 weeks sitting on a table with counters everywhere and, whatever. Now I've got a dog, I've got a daughter, I've got a family, I've got guests who come over. It doesn't work. Getting anything done is now impossible.
For me, it was really funny. I don't know if you were a fan of it, but I was a big fan of the show The Big Bang Theory. And there was one episode of it where Sheldon discovered this World War II Hex Encounter war game, Battle of North Africa, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's this gigantic board that you go and just fills table after table after table. And it's one of those games where the first turn can take 6 or 8 hours. Every single little bit of supply you do and you map and all these kind of things. And like those kind of games, like you said, you could just leave out. And I mean, I have a gaming table and stuff, but even so, like I can't do that. I got to be like, okay, I have 4 hours to play this game if I get 4 hours at all. And you got to fit it in.
I remember back in the day, I think there's a game. I don't remember if it was the war in North Africa. Maybe it was North Africa Core. It was a Hex Encounter game. It was basically a tactical game for all of the conflict in North Africa, and the rules were like so insane that we tried playing it. We never got past the first turn, but they had this one rule. I still remember it, that the Italian units, because the Italians fought in North Africa, they could not do certain things. They had less movement and needed more time because the Italians needed more water because the Italians ate pasta, and so that affected their overall supply. It was insane, this stuff. And that was the stuff we love to try to play. We love that stuff.
That is, yeah.
I don't even know if they make games like that anymore. Probably not. I hope not. That game was awful, by the way. But it was still fun to set up.
I think they make some games kind of like that. But at least for me, my tastes skew towards, I'd rather play a bunch of different games that are quick than play, say, one game that's going to take the same amount of time. Just so I can try something different.
Yeah,
but I know
my tastes have veered again. I've actually started going back, and I'm starting with an old buddy of mine. We're setting up some of the old Marshall Enterprises Napoleonic games. So we're about to start La Bataille d'Auerstadt,
which
is pretty intense Napoleonic grand tactical game, but it's one of those like serious, like you've got the rule book out trying to decipher what the rules mean type game, but it's an amazing, it's a great experience. I don't know if you've ever played any of the Bataille series.
I know of them because of a mutual friend of ours.
Yes. Adrian liked that. He loved that stuff.
Yeah. In all the time I knew him, I don't think he ever got to play any of them during the time I knew him, but he always longed for it. It was one of those, someday he would get to do it, you know, when they had enough space. And
I met Adrian back in the day. So I don't know if I told you this. I think I met Adrian when I was 15. We were both 15, back in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, where we grew up. He grew up in Royersford, and I grew up in King of Prussia. And there was a game store that we used to go to, Complete Strategies in Prussia. And I met him via War Games. That's how we got to know each other back in the day. And we used to see each other every weekend. We were talking about timing. We had a set game time. And every Saturday from basically 2 p.m. to 8, 9 p.m., we would play every Saturday.
That was it Ed Wimble who owned
the store? Yes, Ed Wimble ran the store.
Yeah.
And we met, actually, the way we met, so Ed would host these events, and I had seen this thing about they were hosting a game. It was a TRS game. The guys who made D&D, it was called Boot Hill. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
I know the people, but not the game.
So Boot Hill, I think it was Boot Hill, was this, they were trying to do a Dungeons & Dragons-like game for the Old West, cowboys and bank robbers, Indians, I guess Native Americans now, all that type of stuff, right? And so they were hosting he had a Saturday afternoon demo, and he was running it more, not as a one-off set piece, almost like miniatures game, as opposed to a D&D type campaign, right? Because I don't know if you ever played, you said you hadn't, but Boot Hill was this game, and they were trying to make it D&D. The problem was you go through all this character generation, and then within one or two adventures, every character kept on dying because they were getting shot, and there was no medicine. Everyone dies. But he had about a dozen people playing, and someone was running. I can't remember the gentleman who was running. He was amazing, big guy. And he assigned everyone a role, and my role during the game, and I knew very few people, I was the shopkeeper. I had a small shop. And a turn was 5 seconds, and I think, or maybe it was 10 seconds, and the whole game took, in real time, would have been, you know, game time, 2 minutes, like, or 5 minutes. It was very quick, right? And Adrian, who I hadn't met, but Adrian, I think, was assigned the role of playing a deputy. And Adrian was in, turns out this character came into my shop, the town shop, whatever, the general goods store, because it was being held up by the bad guys who had come riding into town, these ornery guys. And, you know, you had to go through all these dice rolling, you had all these actions, and everyone submitted their actions, then the DM would move the miniatures and tell you what happened, and you have all these side conversations. And I remember having a good time, but I also remember that in the middle of this, for some reason, I decided I was going to take out a shotgun under the counter and shoot the bad guy.
Okay.
And I fumbled and I shot Adrian in the back. And I killed Adrian on the spot.
Yeah, I love it.
And he was so pissed off.
I can picture the face.
You knew Adrian. Adrian at 16 was probably not much different than Adrian at 16. He cursed a blue streak. I mean, he took it well. He was very funny, but he was pissed off. And that's how we met. We actually met. We started talking, and it turns out we both love this new game that had just come out called Squad Leader.
Oh, yes. Him and Squad Leader.
Yes. And we were both looking for someone to play it, right? I had another gaming group that I played with, D&D. I had D&D friends, but they didn't play war games. They were purely, I'm sure you know this, D&Ders oftentimes just want to play D&D.
Yeah, usually the two worlds don't mesh. D&D, you play D&D.
You know, Adrian and I started talking about this great new game Avalon Hill had put out called Squad Leader, and we really loved it. We were looking for people to play it, so we decided that we would meet on a Saturday afternoon, and Ed had enough room in the back of his shop, his table's right, where we could set it up and that's how we got to know it. My mom or dad would drive me to the store because I was only Finn, and Adrian's mom would drive me and pick him up and drop him off when we would play. We started playing every and we became really good friends. We used to play all sorts of, and he was constantly challenging me. And honestly, if I think back about it, I think he probably won the 75% of the. He was a much better player than I ever was. He really loved that.
Yes, he did.
And the funny part was, in squad leader, I would never play the German.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a World War II vet and a medic in the war and had been pretty badly, and I refused to play the German. And he hated the Russian. He hated the Soviet. And he refused. So I always played the Soviets, and he always played the Germans. And then they added expansion sets. They brought in the British, and they brought in the French, and then they finally brought in the Americans. And so he would always play the. And you know, initially we started playing. We do scenarios. And have you ever played Squad Leader? Did you ever play it?
Well, there's a funny story with this. So I think once I wounded Adrian deeply, and that he would talk about Advanced Squad Leader all the time and how much he loved it and, you know, going into depth and everything. And he was like, you know, I know you'll never play this because not my kind of game usually. And I said, you know what? I have this rule. I'll play anything at least once, as long as I don't have to buy anything, have to paint anything, or have to assemble anything. And I'll play anything. It doesn't matter. I'll play anything, mm-hmm. just once. So for you, Adrian, I said, I will play this game, but keep in mind, it's not my type of game. So right. I'm not going to be able to do all your fancy, like, in-depth stuff. Like, you're going to have to, you know, don't take it easy on me, but just, like, be understanding that, right. One, I'm going to be my usual stupid self.
Are you there? I lost you.
I'm sorry, something happened there. I'm going to be my usual stupid self. Crazy things are going to happen. And you're just going to have to get used to that. And also that I'm not going to know what the heck I'm doing with this game. So
were you able to play?
Well, yeah. So like, well, we're playing and it was fun. And of course I did every stupid maneuver. So I'm a very defensive kind of gamer with stuff. I want to turtle. But at this point I was like, you know, I'm going to try new things. I'm going to go on the attack. So I was too aggressive, you could say.
Yes.
And for me, like, first time playing, but it was hard to keep track of, like, this counter with this bonus, but you're on, yeah. this. And so at the end of it, I tried to look at him and I said, so, Adrian, which one did we play? And I think I played as the Americans and I think he played as the Germans on it. As you said, he played the Germans all the time. And he's like, oh, you know, this is the tutorial one. It's the introductory setup. Yeah, and I was like, okay, is there a tutorial to the tutorial? Can we do that one? And he just looked at me and said, never mind you.
I mean, that's the thing with Squad Leader, even back in the day, it was a very complicated game. It was really, you really had to focus and really had to know the rules. And it's very unforgiving.
Yes.
And if you make a mistake and your opponent knows what's going on. And I remember people would talk about it in the game shop and there'd be like this. At around the same time, so this is like the early 80s, computer games were just starting to come out. These sort of tactical computer games are coming out. And people would say, well, with computer games, you get so much more realism and all this. And I thought that was all hogwash because the problem with computer games is you don't know their algorithms. And,
no, you don't.
There are all these sorts of hacks that people do I wouldn't call them cheats, but they would find sort of ways in which they could game the computer game. And I always thought that was, like, you know, unchivalrous. At the same time, there's nothing like a good, and Adrian and I were very good at this, there's nothing like a good in-game argument over rules, which we would do all the time on the new games we played. We didn't do it on Squad Leader because we both knew the rules really well. And one of the things we did is, you know, when we first started, we did the scenarios, but then what we would do is, you know, after probably a month or two of that, we'd say, okay, you know, Squad Leader had this point system where you create your own scenarios, and we would just say, okay, you know, we pick a year, and then we say, okay, 1940, French, German, we pick a map, and you say, okay, you get, you know, 1,200 points, 2,000, and we would just create scenarios, and sometimes they were great, and sometimes they were just so god. It was, you know, like everything, we got into point inflation, and by the end, we were doing, like, okay, 1945, you've got 10,000 points. And like, you know, the Americans had 10,000. The Americans, as the American player, I'd come out with like a dozen Pershing tanks. Meanwhile, during World War II, I think only two Pershings ever saw combat. And he had like a dozen elephants and king tigers. It got so ridiculous, but it was so much fun. We became really good friends over that friendship was really important, really.
I think it's interesting what kind of bonds you can form through gaming. And it might just seem silly. Oh, you're just playing a game. You played a board game or minis or whatever it is. Just your role-playing games. And you just see these people, you know, once a week or whatever. And then you're done. Like, but it's more than that. You deep connections, really.
It is. I mean, look, we started playing when we were in high school. So I was 15, 16. He was the same. When I turned 18, graduated high school. He graduated at the same time. I went off to college. And Adrian, as you know, joined the Navy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went down to Washington, D.C. To go to American University, and Adrian went off to, I think, Erie, Pennsylvania, maybe, for training?
I think so.
He was in Erie for quite some time and then did follow-up school, and then, like, he'd come home and I'd come home from school, and we'd get together, and we'd play. And it wasn't always Squad Leader. I remember there was another game. You know, we tried to mix it up. You know, you were talking about you like playing fun games. We would play these. What we would call beer and pretzel games.
Exactly.
Car Wars. There's a game called Car Wars.
Steve Jackson Games.
Hmm?
Yeah, by Steve Jackson Games.
Yes. We used to play that and have a good time with that.
Yep.
There's another game called Nuclear War card game where you throw nuclear missiles at each other and see who'd wipe each other out. And the 80s were a very dark period. Don't get confused by the music. We would play another game we actually loved to play. It wasn't a beer and pretzels game. It was a game, I don't even know if it's still around, called Yalu. Y-A-L-U.
As in the river? As in the river?
Yes, it was. And that was what it was. It was the Korean Peninsula, Chinese entering the Korean conflict. It was a great game. It was a really good game where you had really high quality American and sort of UN units, but very small, versus a horde of Chinese and North Korean units. And it started with basically the Chinese invasion, right? With the Chinese entering the war and pushing the Americans back. It was a great game. And we used to play that a number of times. We really liked that. That was a good game. And on that one, we would switch it up. I would be the Americans or the UN, or I'd be the Chinese and he'd be vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that game is still around. I looked it up the other. I think you can get copies of it on eBay. You can get anything on eBay. But for people who like traditional hex and counter board games, that was a good one.
Well, you might be happy to know, according to BoardGameGeek.com, there's a second edition of it from 2010, put out by Compass Games and designer John Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So as of when we're recording anyway in 2022, it's only 12 years old.
And that's a second edition, which means it had to go to reprint. Because we are playing the first edition, baby. We didn't play those reprints.
I presume maybe there's a third edition. And actually, John Hill did Squad Leader, too.
Did he? Maybe that's why we liked it. I didn't know that.
I think that might have had something to do with it. Oh, and Across a Deadly Field? I know that.
Yeah. And that was a great game because it also had air power in it and some naval forces. It was a great... There was another game I remember, and it was a disaster. So you got to remember, this is the 80s, and we're in high school. And we would go into the game shop every weekend. I mean, my high school was three blocks from the game shop. Every day on the way home, I'd hang out at the game shop. So I was there all the time. I was not that much.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one game I had seen. So do you remember the movie The Longest Day? John
Yes.
Wayne. World
oh,
War II?
Beautiful movie.
Yeah. Classic. So someone, I don't know, it was Avalon Hill or someone created this game called The Longest Day. I remember it pretty vividly. It was in a red box, a picture of the beach. I think it was The Longest
Day. Yep, 1979.
This thing was huge.
Avalon Hill, you're right.
It was $60.
That's a lot of money.
For a high school student? That was mind-boggling a lot of money. But we would look at this game and it was like, you know, up on the shelf, and I just remember the spotlight on it, and like all the dust was around it, but Ed always dusted that game, so it was always perfect. Probably what happened was I picked it up every week and just took the dust off myself. But we used to look at this game with awe, like, we're going to get this game. And finally, I'd gotten a job. I was working part-time, and I was able to save enough money, and I bought the game. And we're like, we're going to play this. So I read the rules, and the rules were just insane. This is a tactical level game for the entire invasion of France. And I mean, how many troops were involved? How many divisions? And we're playing a tactical level game down to, and companies could break down into, it was crazy. And we set this thing up one day in the back of the game shop and started trying to play it. And you know what? The game was completely unplayable.
Oh, no.
It didn't friggin' work. Nothing made sense. It was the biggest piece of crap game I think I ever purchased. And it was, you know, it was a lot of money. I saved a lot of money for this game. And the thing just didn't friggin' work. We were so pissed. Adrian, at the end of it, just stormed out to get a cigarette and was just cursing for what must have been an hour. He was so pissed because we were so looking forward to it. But it just didn't work. Did not work at all.
Oh, my goodness.
That was so funny.
Well, according to the internet, if you had played the whole thing, you would have needed 90 hours to complete it.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy. I think the best part of it was punching the counters and trying to set it up. We had fun doing that. But once we started trying to play, it was so friggin' frustrating. It was just awful. It was awful. It was so pissed. I was so pissed, you know. But that was the joy. You know, you'd go out on a Saturday, we'd spend, you know, I'd get there at 2, and we, you know, by the time I was 16, my parents let me drive their car. You know, okay. Then you can drive at 16. So on the weekends, my father didn't work, so he let me drive his car. It was a crappy Chevy Chevette, 1978 Chevy Chevette. I used to call it the Vet. It was a joke.
Yeah.
Worst car ever. But I could drive, so I could go and pick Adrian up, or I could take Adrian home so we could play late. And you know, when I went to college, I'd come back, and when he was back, we'd play. And I remember very vividly when he came home one day, and he talked about this woman he had met. You know, what happened with that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. He was so excited. I'm like, what are you talking about? He was like, he had met this girl, and I'm like, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're about to ship out. He'd gone to sub school.
Yeah.
He was about to ship out in the Sea of Corpus Christi, and he was talking about this girl, and then I went back to college, and a few months later, he came back and said, you know, I'm getting married. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm getting married. I want you to be part of the wedding. So this was, God, I don't even know what year this was. You know when they were married? Gotta be.
I do, but I can't remember.
86, 87, somewhere on that.
I think so.
Maybe a little earlier. I can't remember. Because what happened was, after, you know, we went to the wedding. It's a whole story. I'll happily tell you the story of the wedding. Hilarious. Getting married in Indiana. A Jew goes to Indiana. It sounds like a start of a joke. He got married, and soon after, I graduated college, hung out in 3 years, and then I got a job in the government. And he was shipped out on the City of Corpus Christi, and I went into training 2 years before I went to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where our friendship ended. It was just time and distance got the better of us. We both sort of went into these careers at a time that were very difficult to keep. I couldn't, yeah, that was a shame. But I still recall very vividly him coming back, and we're setting up a game. He's talking about this amazing woman he had met. So happy. And what are you talking about? Women? No, we're talking about like a game, goddammit.
Yeah, what is this nonsense?
What is this nonsense? Yeah, that was amazing. And then you know, there's a whole bunch of us who were very friendly. There was a small group of war gamers. And he invited us all to the wedding, and we all made the trek from Philadelphia all the way out to Indiana. And it may have been Western Ohio, but it was my buddy Paul at the time. I went out, I was able to borrow my parents' bigger car. And so I took three or four of us, and my buddy Paul, he had just gotten this Samurai. He was very excited to drive that. He drove out in his Samurai his wedding. And I remember going over the mountain in the west by the Allegheny River. And the Suzuki was such a piece of crap. This was brand new, too. He had to draft behind a truck to get over the mountain. Because his car, it was so slow. But we get out to the wedding, and the wedding is it was at a American Legion, this beautiful little ceremony. But Adrian was nervous as all get out. And I remember it was no alcohol.
Yeah.
It was a very, you know, strict environment. They didn't have any alcohol. And I snuck in a bottle of, the only thing I could get hold of was like schnapps.
Oh, goodness.
And we were drinking that as he was getting ready. It was god awful stuff. I'm amazed. He held his alcohol better than I did. I remember getting violently ill between the ceremony, after the ceremony and before the, but he did great. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he did it, but my God, he could hold it. I wish, God, I haven't thought about that in a long time.
That's funny.
And that wedding was basically the last time I saw him. I went off to a career overseas in Southern Africa and then went to Bosnia, traveled all over the world. And he had been in the Navy for a while and then came out, but we never reconnected. And then I guess a couple of years ago, he reconnected with Ed Wimble from the store. And Ed connected with a friend of mine who had given me Adrian's name and number. He'd given him his number and his address. And I had it. And I wanted to reach out to him, but I could never find the time. I had family, work, and we were selling our business. Very stressful. It was a shame. It was a shame. I never got to reach it. By the time I was able to reach out to him, I had heard that he was very sick. And as soon as I heard that, I dropped everything. I called, but he was incapable of going to the phone. And that was hard. You know, I've been very fortunate in my life. I've had great opportunities. I don't live life with regrets. I have very few. One of my biggest regrets is not reaching out. I think time is, you know, if I give people one bit of advice from an old fogey like myself, is, you know, time is a resource that you don't appreciate it when you're younger. You think you have all the time in the world. And then middle age happens, and before you know it, you look like I do, bald and gray, and you're like, what the hell happened? You know, just the other day, I was overthrowing governments in Africa, and now look at me. But I regret deeply not reestablishing when I first got an age. And that still affects me.
Well, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing for you to know, but from time to time, I didn't know it was you at the time he was referring to, but Adrian would talk about someone who I knew was you now about gaming times from the past. And he would talk about, he'd be like, there was this guy, Ed Wimble, and he just clashed our arms. I was like, I have no idea who you're talking about. I don't know. I was like, I'm in the world, but like, right. That's like a whole nother. And so he would just say how wonderful it was to go and game, and that he had this buddy he would game with all the time, and how you play these Hex Encounter games, and he's like, you would never play any of these, like, you know, being really dismissive, be like, you know, if you were a real gamer, not really, but like, because I mean, that's part of what he and I did. Like, that's the way we very unhealthily showed that we cared about each other.
And that was definitely Adrian. So what I remember most about Adrian is he did not suffer fools gently.
Mm-mm.
He let people know. He was a very sharp guy.
Yes.
He was a wonderful friend, and he really cared about the people who were in his life. He was, you know, he comes across as this guy who, you know, he's not very emotive. He's not like a hail fellow well met. But mm-hmm. once you get to know him, he had an amazing sense. He's very dry, very smart.
Absolutely.
He was a smart guy.
One of my greatest joys would be to make him laugh.
He had a great laugh.
It did, and he was very selective in what he found funny. And so, like you said, anyone who knew him, unless they knew him really well, they would just think he's very curmudgeonly.
Yes, curmudgeon is the word, gruff.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, he was, but that's how he kind of deflected all those who were, well, foolish. Somehow I got past that because I am so foolish. I'm a clown. And yet there's something there that he decided to tolerate and put up with. And
no, I don't think it's that. I think that he was an excellent judge of character. He knew people. He watched. And one of the things that would piss me off, watch me play. And I think he really took in the way I played. He knew how I played. He knew that I was a conservative gamer. Mm-hmm. Like, I would let the battle unfold. I always had a reserve. So he knew after a while how to take advantage of that. And that's why that son of a bitch always won. He paid attention.
He did.
And he knew how to take advantage of it. At the same time, if I got him and I did something unexpected, he would get so angry with him. And he would mutter under his breath countless times. But he was a really good gamer. And he was very, he liked complicated things. Mm-hmm. He did not, he played simple stuff, but a good complicated game. That's why I think he loved Squad Leader and Advanced Squad Leader, because the rules are like, it's like a textbook.
Yes.
You really have to know your stuff to play. And we also loved miniature. At the end, we started collecting and started painting miniatures. And we were always on the lookout. We loved World War II. I loved playing the Soviet armor stuff. And it sort of, I think wargaming sort of really segued into my career and helped. It gave me a lot of knowledge. And so, you know, when I joined up on the service, and for your listeners aren't going to know this, I may not believe it, but I was in the CIA for 13 years. It was that knowledge of the world that really helped me get in. And because, you know, I knew about all the history of these countries. I understood the Soviet Union, and I had a degree. I graduated from American University with a degree in Soviet area studies and Russian history. And it was wargaming and Adrian that really helped me cement all that. It was great. I love that. Still do.
He loved a really good problem. He would like to tackle it and just kind of, I think that's why he was good in his work, doing programming and in the gaming. Like he didn't play the game. He played the player.
Right. He definitely did.
That's a smart way to do it, really.
Yeah. And it didn't matter the rule set. He was smart enough to capture all the rule set.
Yes.
But we would play World War II armor miniatures. Mm-hmm. We would play some Napoleonic miniatures, but we only had World War II. I had, at the end, I had probably a division's worth Soviet armor, T-34s, SUKVs, like mid-war 42-40 feet Soviet. And I had probably a division's worth of American 43-44 Shermans and 4A31s. Priest, the whole nine yards, and he loved German armor. He loved the Panthers, Tigers, the Mark. And I keep on going back to, you know, him loving the Germans and playing the Germans, but he was, I mean, it was for him, it was the technical side of it. That
yeah, no absolutely.
Before my intimating that he was pro-Nazi, he was anything.
Oh,
but.
He absolutely was not pro-Nazi. No. But you're right. He liked the tech. He was really interested in the weaponry that they had created and yes. That was used, because there was a lot of innovation there, and I think he appreciated the.
And we would go. So we would start at 2 o'clock, and around 4 we'd go to lunch. Mm-hmm. And every day we would go to the same place for lunch. So King of Prussia, a place called Michael's, which was a deli, and they had steaks in. And he and I would get the same thing every week: a mushroom steak with sauce, mm-hmm. fries, extra crispy, and he would yell at me because I was the same thing all the time. And then we would get into these just heated debates about why Soviet armor, why the T-34 was the greatest tank. No, the Panther was. And this would go on for hours. And we would just have the greatest time and bringing up all this esoteric stuff. And as I said, it prepared me for life, because it taught me first about details, but also taught me, you know, history, culture. Mm-hmm. And Adrian is a really important part of that.
Yes.
And, you know, our friendship was at the time was most one of the most important friendships I had. I mean, how long did you know Adrian? When did you meet? How did you meet?
Oh, goodness. So he and I got together through miniature gaming, and we would play World War II games. We did Flames of War, which is a 15 millimeter scale World War II game. So we would do that. We did some bolt action, which is 28 millimeter World War II. Mm-hmm. So larger people and tanks and things like that. One thing that we did a lot of, and this kind of really became a habit for us, was originally was Tuesdays. Every Tuesday we would get together and meet. But then it became Wednesdays, really. So we would do these Wednesday gaming. There'd be a bunch of us who would get together who were all into like World War II kind of game. And we would play this game called War at Sea, not the old Hex Encounter one, but this was like a Baron Pretzel World War II naval miniatures game put out by Wizards of the Coast. So they pre-painted ships and planes, and he hated that it was collectible, so that like, you would buy a box of stuff and you didn't know what you're going to get. Meanwhile, I was like, this is the best thing ever. We can buy all the things. And
so, he would hate that. I can see him just, that's not like, he wants a specific ship. He wants this. I want this item.
Yep.
I can see that.
So he'd get annoyed. So he would buy some, but really I was the idiot who was like, give me a whole case of all your things because I can get a 10% discount for the case. And so I just buy way too much of this stuff, which has now become very valuable because they don't make it anymore. And so I would have all the things. And there'd be maybe, I don't know, six or eight of us individuals there gaming. And so we would just play. And you'd play like one-off games and you'd have this mat where it was almost kind of like chess or checkers because you could only move from like to certain squares. They had to be adjacent. Right. And your speed said how many squares you could move. And then you could have carriers and submarines. And I loved having submarines. I was a big fan of wolf packs. I was like, wolf packs are awesome. Let's do this whole kind of thing here. And so we would do all this. And the game... a lot of fun, but very much one of those where you have to play as like a certain faction with certain stuff in order to be competitive to do whatever. And so we would branch out and play other stuff from that. And then after a time, we would start just kind of playing we both loved Rev War stuff. So we would do American Revolution or Civil War kind of things and kind of drift into some other people. And then we started going to convention. So it was the year after I got married. So it was 2011. Mm-hmm. And he had talked about this convention up in Maine called Huzzah that he went to the year before and was like the first year. And he said, oh, that I should go. That would be a lot of fun. And I was like, oh, you know, this sounds interesting. And so I talked to my wife about it. And she's like, yeah, you know, we can go. We'll go and just make like a weekend of it and do this long thing. And I said, okay. And then I find out Huzzah that year was going to be on the weekend of my wedding anniversary. And so I look at my wife, I said, well, I guess that means we're not going. She said, why? And I was like, what? What do you mean? Why wouldn't we go?
Your wife, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And I said, okay, so here's what we'll do. You know, we'll go. It'll be you and I, but my buddy Adrian's going to be up there. And I'll split the time. Half the time I'll play games and I'll hang out with him. The other half will be you and I up in Portland, Maine. And so we'll just go and like see stuff because neither one of us been to Portland. So we went to Old Port and just all these cool things. And so we did that for a few years and then had our first kid and we went twice. And of course, things change when you have a child.
Yeah, everything gets put on its head, especially, you know, gaming, which takes a gaming. The one thing about gaming is it takes a lot of time.
It does.
Not just to play the game, but you gotta study the rules. You gotta get everyone together, schedules. It's brutal.
A lot of organization, like podcasting. There's a lot of planning that goes into it. And my incredible wife, I'd be like, okay, we're splitting in half. And she didn't want to go out and about with the baby. And I don't blame her. And the baby, you know, used to a routine, didn't like stressful. Yeah, so like they'd be sequestered in the hotel room and I felt terrible. And so after the second year, my wife said, maybe we won't do this, but you still go. And I was like, okay. So then Adrian and I would go. We'd share a room and it started becoming a thing. So we would go to that. We would go to this convention in Marlborough, Massachusetts called TotalCon. And actually, we started doing that first. We'd go just for a day and it's more of a role-playing game, board game kind of convention, but with miniatures. And then we started staying at that. And there was at one point, I said, you know, you should come on my podcast. And he's like, oh, podcast being, you know, all this mess. Because I had talked about it for years at that point. It's like, oh, it's a podcast. What are you? Nonsense, you silly person, you. But in, you know, sterner words that I can't repeat for a family-friendly show. And so he's like, okay, fine, I'll come on. And then something happened and he bailed on it. And I was insistent because I knew he would like it because we could drill down into stuff and just dedicate a whole episode to an aspect of a game or whatever, and it'd be the chance for him to get to talk to some of these people who
he would have loved that. He loved the deep dive. The Adrian and I probably loved the
And like to be able to talk to the game designers and stuff.
Yeah.
And this isn't something I should ever admit, but it is so hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that in some weird way this show is very much on the fringe, but like part of the gaming community and industry that these individuals want to come on the show and talk, and that they'll respond to messages from me because I think of myself as a nobody, but they come on. And I was like, hey, you got
to
do this.
I always found gamers to be very open. And if you're a gamer and you're genuine, people want to talk to them because most people, you know, I mentioned Labatai, the Austerlitz, or Labatai, the Elau, Preussian mm-hmm. Elau, to my wife. And her, I can't even get past the first syllable before the glaze goes over her eyes. It's not even, it, I don't even get, people who don't do this don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, it's one of these things that I find that the gamers like to talk about games.
They do.
And there's nothing better than it. And I remember going to conventions and having a great time. You know, my challenge has always been, so, you know, after I left the government, I moved to New York City. Mm-hmm. In New York City, when I left the government, there's not much room to set up a game in an apartment in New York City.
No, there's not.
No, it doesn't work. And then when you have kids, it's mm-hmm. impossible. It just, it is that not only have the time constraint, but you also have the space.
That's worse, I think, than the time issue.
Yeah. And interestingly, New York, you know, gaming in New York City, it's very vibrant right now. And what mm-hmm. they've done is there are all these game cafes where you go in and, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with them. You rent a table yep. and you play a game. That's where you play your games. No one plays at home anymore. They can't. Nobody is wealthy enough to afford a gaming space in New York, at least in Manhattan.
No, of course not. And I mean, you have the whole pandemic thing that has been happening. So like, but even that aside, you still wouldn't. I know a guy, a lawyer in New York City, him and his wife, I believe, are expecting now. And he does a really interesting thing because he does massive gaming. But what he does is he only games at conventions. So he buys all these things, right?
Right.
Because he has the resources to do so. So he buys all the stuff. And then he commissions someone to build and paint it. And actually, for a lot of his stuff now, it's a buddy of mine, John, who's a fantastic painter. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of retired, semi-retired because of some health issues, but he's really talented painter. And so I connected them. And so John paints the stuff for this guy. And then when the stuff's done, the guy has it all sent to a storage unit. He tends to go to Historicon a lot to run these like feudal Japanese kind of games.
Right.
So he keeps a storage unit out there, semi-nearby Historicon, and all the stuff stays in there, and he takes it all out for whatever convention he's going to run all these games.
And people probably think that's insane.
Makes sense to me. His wife's okay with it. He's okay with it. Do it.
I live in Manhattan. Just for people who don't live in Manhattan, I mean, how much do their parking spot in Manhattan goes for?
For a year? I would say $8,000 to $10,000.
Oh, it's crazy. It's $1,000 a month for a parking spot. So yeah. $50 a month for a storage unit to keep all your gaming stuff in this, like, that's perfect. Yeah. I could do that. That's actually a really good idea.
This is what the guy does, and he gets a lot of joy, and he runs and, you know, he'll paint some stuff at home. He has like a little painted area that he can do, or used to, I mean, before the baby, I mean, who knows how that'll go. But yeah, the areas we do, but most of it just to get the stuff done and to get it done in a timely manner and to a level that he really wants, he commissions someone and does it. And then he runs the game. So he spends the time reading the rules and getting it down pat. And it brings him a lot of joy. And like Adrian loved reading rules. And so
Adrian, I do recall that, and he was very good at that. He would digest a lot of stuff. He played a lot less than he read.
Yes.
And for me, what I do is like I go to a buddy's house and we play there.
Yep.
Like these games, the Marshall Enterprises, which are now Clash of Arms. He sets them up in his basement and they sit there because he's got the space. His kids are graduated from college, so he's got all this room in his house. So I'll go back down to Pennsylvania and play. I'll go down for a week and play. And it's great fun. It's like reliving my youth, there was a period there. I just couldn't for many years. I had stopped. So when I went overseas, all that stopped. There was no time in that. And then came back and then, you know, life has a way of getting in the way of the best laid plans, right? It does.
Very true.
And so you know, now that for me, I'm a little bit, you know, more stable and sort of semi-retired, I can pursue these hobbies. And it's great. And I'm looking for new games. I'm looking for new people to play with. And I go back to the games I played back when I was 18, 20. Fascinated by World War II. Fascinated.
A lot of fun. And I mean, like Adrian and I, we'd play at game stores. But even then, after a while, we realized we had more fun not playing at the game store. So we would do it at conventions. Mm-hmm. And then I started doing, I don't know if you've heard of them. There's a charity called Extra Life. So it's this, it's a nonprofit. They're big with video games, but they do other kind of stuff. So people, gamers sign up. There's a one day a year, you game for 24 hours for that. on your own. You can have a bunch of people or whatever, and you raise money, and then the money goes to pay for medical care for kids whose family can't afford needed medical care. And I mean, I can't imagine, I mean, you have a daughter, I have two daughters. I can't imagine having them have any sort of major illness and not being able to afford to get the care.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, no. It's horrifying.
And so it brings tears to my eyes. I'll start crying on the podcast. It wouldn't be the first time I cried on the podcast. And
you crying on the podcast is not that unusual.
Yeah, I mean, it's become a thing now, I think, where it's like, is he not going to cry?
It's a game.
It kind of, yeah, it should be. And so Adrian would come over, and I'd have some guys come over. And so when we bought our house, one of the things that was important to me was to have a dedicated podcast gaming kind of space. Mm-hmm. And so I had a studio on the main floor. We're in a ranch, and I lost the studio when our second child was born. Okay, though, because it came up better. So
kids will do that. They are little parasites, man.
So we have a finished basement. It's very 70s wood paneling and everything, which it's fine. And so I moved all my gear down here. So I podcast down here in the studio, but there's a gigantic space for a 4x6 foot table.
And you can game.
You can game on there. I could leave stuff on it right now. It's a mess with all my Lego because I'm in a Lego gaming kind of phase right now. But then I'd have all the guys, Adrian and all the guys, they'd come over and they'd spend.
One of the greatest joys you'll have is my daughter is 14 going on, mm-hmm. and by herself she discovered
nice.
Is now playing D&D regularly, and yep. I get such a joy out of seeing her, because when I was probably a little older than I think I discovered D&D, I played rigorously D&D for 2 or 3 years. We had a Friday night gaming session, all these people, we did it all the time, mm-hmm. and then we sort of got bored with D&D and we went on to RuneQuest and other games, other role-playing games.
Yeah.
But to have her discover it was like the greatest thing. She discovered it on her own. I just love watching her play.
That's awesome. And it's such a, it's going to sound weird to say, but it gives you so many really good life skills.
It does.
And it just, it's helpful for a lot of things. I'm very lucky kind of to go back to people who are willing to connect with me because of the show that I, working through it in therapy, it's okay though. So some of the people who created D&D, like I've been able to connect to Gygax's kids.
Really?
Yeah. For a while, Wargaming Recon was part of the TSR podcast network. Mm-hmm. And we were the flagship Wargaming show. And so this is at the time that Gygax magazine was coming out.
Oh, wow.
And so like Luke and Ernie were kind of involved. But then like Frank Mentzer and Tim Kask, people who Dragon Magazine and helped to create some of the early stuff. I know someone, Jeff Talanian, who worked with Gary on Castle Zagig. And so I'm not really a role player. I've played some role playing games, but like I have a lot of friends because of the show. It's so weird for me to say, who are in definitely deep into that world. And
oh yeah, and it is. And so I'm stories. Hopeful that my daughter will continue to play and then hopefully take those skills. And if she goes to wargaming, that's great. But if not, just the skills. And, you know, to bring this, you know, back to wargaming, I find the skills that you learn playing wargaming were extremely valuable in my life. It
yes.
teaches you to pay attention, focus on details, plan, have fallback plans, how to improvise, you know, and more importantly, how to lose gracefully.
That's important. That's a hard one.
It is a hard one. It is a hard one. And it's okay to be upset, but you know, afterwards you go and grab a steak sandwich with mushrooms and sauce. It's good.
There's a game store up near here. They've moved, but the Hobby Bunker, and I think for Adrian, it reminded him of the Complete Strategist to a degree. And every year they would do a game day, usually in August or so. And so he and I would go to it. It would be north of Boston. And he would drive because driving gives me anxiety, especially distances. And so he would drive. And part of our routine would be we would go. And he hated traffic. It was one of those things that really annoyed the heck out of him. And so we'd go. The traffic would be terrible going. He'd be all like, and we'd go. We'd play games. And he'd get his stuff out. And then I would treat him to lunch after. And there was this really good Irish kind of pub nearby. So like we'd go and we'd get like, they'd have Guinness stew and right. we'd get beers and things and just kind of go and wind down. We'd spend, I don't know, 6-7 hours there or whatever. And then on the way back, of course, we would end up always hitting Boston traffic, because no matter what you do, the Boston traffic was terrible, because we'd go north of the city, but you'd have to go down through it. And so there's, I can't share this exact story because it is just so inappropriate. So I would tell him the first time doing it.
He did like the Curse of Blue Street.
I would tell him the story about an individual who we had known. And the story was completely inappropriate, but funny. So like inappropriate humor, just something that he and I would laugh at because it's like absurd humor gets me. And so every time we would drive on the way back, I would tell a little another part of the story. And I would, you know, of course, mention something from the first time I had told it, and it just bring it to him. And he would just, he'd start laughing and laughing and big belly laughs out of him. And then he could tolerate the traffic a little bit better, which was my whole purpose of doing it. But just trying to make him laugh, get him to de-stress a little bit from it. And I mean, the story was 100% legit, but like, oh my. Yeah,
it was amazing what a good game store can do.
Yeah.
I was actually back in Philadelphia weeks ago. I haven't been back in years. And we stopped by the Complete Strategist. It had moved.
Yep.
It wasn't in the original location, but it had moved not far away. And at some point, I'm looking through it with my buddy, and it's like, this place hasn't changed at all. And at some point, it has completely changed, right? Yeah. It is like, but it is the same vibe. It had the same smell, you know, the same ugly carpet. And the funny part was, and it amazes me, is like, I didn't recognize any of the games. I guess, you know, if you characterize me now, I'm a much more serious gamer. I like much more serious games.
Mm-hmm.
Like the beer and pretzel stuff doesn't, I want to be challenged. I really want to be challenged. I want to take on hard battles and really explore them. And that reminds me, one of the games we did play with Adrian, which is a great game, I don't even know, it was one of the best, was a game called Caesar at Alesia. Have you heard of that?
You know, that actually, that sounds familiar, and I don't know why, if it's something you talked about or what it was.
It's a famous battle that happens in Gaul.
Yeah.
Before Caesar takes over. And he's laying siege to the city of Alesia, where the barbarians are. The barbarian army then surrounds. So he's surrounding a city, and then the barbarians surround him. And it was this great game, and we used to play it. And it was always a challenge. Always a challenge. No matter which side you were, it was a difficult fight. And he loved that. And I loved it too. And it's like, that's the type of stuff I'm into. Like, I don't want a lopsided victory. I want a good, hard shot. And I want rules that are tactically realistic that give me the opportunity to explore and try to figure out what I would do if I were in this. That's the stuff that really gets me.
No, that makes sense. I think that's something that he didn't get to do much of later on in life, but I think that also
to get older.
Well, I think it brought him a lot of joy though. The closest I think for him would be we would run games at conventions for people to play in, and I'm terrible with remembering the rules or what, because my brain's too full of other crazy things. And so his role was to be the rules guy. Mm-hmm. And so he would know the rules inside and out and what you needed to roll to hit and this and that. And I would know how to play the game, but he'd be able to do the deep dives and get in and out. And so when we would be there at running the games, I would provide all the flair and all the like the hype and stuff to get people in and keep it fun and interesting. And he'd be like, this is what you got to do. And this is how this and that. And just to kind of go. And we would get a lot of younger players to come in our games along with the grown-ups and just kind of have this nice blend. And it wouldn't have happened without him. So to have someone be able to do that kind of stuff, he was very, very good at it. Just kind of had that nice mind for it.
Yeah. And as I said, it really, I'm very upset with me that I was never able to. It's one of those things where, you know, big regret. And it was foolishness. And I was talking to his wife after he passed, and he was saying the same thing. He wanted to reconnect. He had gotten my number, and just things got in the way. Stupid stuff. You know?
I know what you mean. He had told me that he was going to be reconnecting with you, and that he had your information and wanted to reach out. I remember when he told me that they were going to be moving. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. We went out to eat, and he loved to eat and try all sorts of foods, which is something I don't think people would get. The idea when they would first meet him, very adventurous with food. And so like the first time I wanted to try shabu shabu hot Chinese hot pot, he's the one I talked to. I said, I know you like to try different foods, but like, I don't know. Oh yeah, let's go. We'll do this. Like,
I mean, he had this look, he had the mutton chops. He was very, you know, you would expect him to be a Hell's Angels biker.
Yep.
But he was not that person.
No, he wasn't. And so like we did that, but we went, he loved Mexican food or American Mexican right. food. And so we went to this restaurant and we sit down and we're hanging out and he's like, so I want to tell you something. And it very much felt like when your girlfriend's going to break up with you. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like what's going on? And so I could kind of feel, I'm very empathetic towards people. Uh-huh. So I pick up on, and I'm thinking, oh, something's really bad is coming. Like, what did I do? He said, so we bought a house. I was like, that's wonderful. Where's your house going to be? Well, it's in, we're moving to Pennsylvania. And like the way he said it, like, it was just really, yeah. And I was like, oh. And I was like, no, but that's good for you. But it was very much like, here's our breakup dinner kind of thing. Which I said, well, you know, when are you going? And not for a few years. I said, so we still have time, but you know, there's the internet of things. It's not like we're not going to hang out or see each other again, right? He said, oh, no, no. And so we were actually making plans up until he found out how bad things were. That we were making plans. He and I were going to get together and go to Gettysburg because I had never been. And so we were going to hit up all these Civil War things. And his brother-in-law, I never knew until afterwards when I started connecting with him, his brother-in-law, Chris, was going to come out and meet us. So we were going to do a trip. So I think at some point, I don't know when, I've been talking with his wife, but she wants me to come down. So I'm going to come down, not this year, probably next year. But I think I'm going to go with his wife and his daughter. We're going to go to Historicon. And I think his brother-in-law is going to come out at some point, I think. And we're going to do like a Gettysburg kind of thing.
That'd be great to, so a couple things. I didn't know this about Andy, that he had been sick much earlier.
Yeah.
As a youth, as a kid, had pretty serious bout of cancer. I didn't know.
I knew he was sick as a kid, but I didn't know what it was.
Right. And so, you know, this stuff I didn't know until just three past. Yeah. But, you know, he was very, you know, with that stuff, he was very private. But I do know that he was, and talking to his wife and talking to Ed Wimble, who was a mutual friend of ours who ran the game store, now runs Clash of Arms, owns started Clash of Arms. Ed was saying he was very excited about returning to Pennsylvania because he's looking forward to getting into really hardcore gaming because Ed, you know, he creates these.
Yes.
And some of his games that the creator are amazing, amazing stuff. If you haven't checked out Clash of Arms, if you're a Hex and Counter guy, you should definitely check out Clash of Arms. But he was very excited, and then, of course, you know what happened, and that's when the best laid plans of mice and men come to naught in the face of world events.
No, that's true. He knew they were going to be moving down there, one of his trips down, he told me he went to go see Ed, and he, I guess, hung out there for hours that day.
Yeah.
He said it reminded him of being a kid, like with you, and how he would go, and I think his exact words were, he was amazed that Ed put up with you punks.
Oh my God.
For the hours that you'd be there till sometimes until 2 a.m, I guess he said.
Yeah.
But that he was going to do that kind of thing again. And he was so excited about that.
Ed was, he had this almost French Napoleonic mustache. So he had this mustache that was curled up. And he let us hang out in his store all the time. And we just talked. And I know if the roles were reversed, I would have murdered all of us. And buried us behind the dumpster.
Yep.
We were so obnoxious teenagers, didn't know anything, but Ed put up with it. He created this great, safe environment for us to do what we loved. And for the most part, Ed was not judgmental. He was a wonderful guy. He is a wonderful guy. He's now, he still lives in Pennsylvania. He's got like 18 grandkids. I see pictures of him on Facebook. He's living his best life, I hope. But he put up a lot of crap. And a lot of us musing about stuff we did not know diddly about. You know, happy to engage.
Yeah.
And I know if I were stuck in that situation, I am sure I would kill
him. Not an easy thing.
I know Adrian was excited about going back there. I know he did read with Ed, but he never got the opportunity to do what he wants. So I'm looking forward to really digging into some of these games now that I've got an opportunity to join them.
Yeah, no, I think it's, for me, and this is so trite, but when Adrian passed, I had dealt with a lot of friends and family members dying around the same time. Like that was a year of people dying on me. And it's been really hard even now. It's hammered even more the importance of just not waiting and just trying to go and to be more appreciative. So for me, one of the things I've always wanted to kind of do, I mean, not the early days, I was dumb then, but like one of the things I've wanted to do with the podcast is to make do some good in the world, right? There's a lot of awfulness out there, and just to try to do something to leave it a little bit better than I found it. And
so one of the things I found is that changing the world is a noble endeavor, but very, very difficult.
Yeah.
But giving people around you an escape, giving them joy and allowing them to you know, play a game and escape all the garbage that's going on or to listen to something, that in and of itself is an amazing thing. I, too, was very affected by its passing. It really hit me much harder than I expected. You know, here's someone who I had been friends with 30 years ago for 6-8 years. And then all of a sudden, I hadn't seen him for 30 years, and all of a sudden, he's passing, and it really hit me. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, you know, what are the odds of us even being friends, right? At the time, we were friends. You know, people have been around a long time. We happened to coincide, and we had 8 years of really enjoying each other's company and having a great time. And I'm appreciative of it. And now that, you know, for me moving forward, it's taking the time to do things that I can to enjoy the folks around me and not be such a jerk, which I oftentimes have a tendency. That's my life lesson.
Well, I think all of us have moments where we're not our best selves. And I know it's hard. Don't ask my wife, because clearly I've never had that happening. I have to be thankful and appreciative that I think I had almost 20 years. I had like 18 years with Adrian.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And we weren't as close in the beginning. It was more casual, but we became much closer after I got him to come on the show because I knew he'd love it. And he did. And just like...
And that in and of itself is an amazing thing. And that's a legacy you can be proud of. Because people listen to this, they have a good time.
They do.
That's important. And I know you like to minimize that. Like, you shouldn't do that.
No, I know I shouldn't.
Because by minimizing it, what you're doing is you're eroding your own self-value. And you're actually doing a lot of good out there. You're not curing cancer.
No.
But that's not what you're trying to do.
No, that's true.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. Thank you.
I'm retired now. I now own a record store.
Yes.
Vinyl store. It's great. It's low pressure. People come in to listen to music. They're not coming in to solve the Russian-Ukrainian war. Nope, that's not my job anymore. I don't have to worry about that. And it gives me a lot of joy.
No, you're right.
Right?
I try to do whatever small bit I could do.
Exactly.
That's all
you can do.
With the show. And like you said, people, it seems to resonate with people. It's for me, it's amazing. And it's really the thing that gets me the most is when someone will, you know, they write a comment online or they'll send a message or something. The first time I ever met someone in person who said, "Oh, I love your podcast." And I was like, "What? I knew people listen because you can see that, but like someone actually listened and they were enthusiastic." And like it happens. People are, and just the fact that it's made it so we've done for me, mental health has become a thing that's very important.
Right.
And to try to normalize it because I have a soapbox that not everyone has. And some people will listen. And so I've been trying to, both for myself and others who've been on, try to be really open about it. And there was one episode I did where I talked about my battles with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the messages I got from people sharing their own stories and how just hearing me share mine helped them to know they weren't alone. That was huge. And
that's important. That is really important. And, you know, I think there's a lot to be taken away from that. I think there's a lot to be taken away from, you know, your willingness to get up there. Most people don't understand how difficult it is to do a podcast.
It's not easy.
Podcast for 18 months. We did two dozen shows. The shows were 25 minutes. Each show probably took us 250 to 300 hours to put. Mm-hmm. Now, doesn't mean your podcast has that much input, but it's a lot of work. And to continue this for so many years is quite an accomplishment.
I'm too stubborn to give up.
Or too stupid, which is, you choose. I was the same way.
Yeah. There have been times where I was like, oh, I'm done. I'm going to get, when Adrian passed, that was one of them. I was like, I don't know if I can do it anymore because it was too hard. And then it was, well, I'm going to do it for him. And then it was like, well, no, I'm doing it for myself too. I'm doing it because we can do. And there's been talking about role-playing games. There's been some stuff coming out lately about some, I guess you would call them influencers in the role-playing community, accusations of things that weren't so great. Well, that's an understatement. Where if they're true, it's awful, just terrible stuff. And these individuals had portrayed themselves as, you know, being the kind people. And like kindness is kind of my thing. Like deep down, like I think everyone deserves kindness, and it doesn't cost you anything. Be kind and try to lift others up. And these individuals weren't doing it. And when these things kind of came out for me, I was like, do you know what? I'm not going to, like, if they're doing that and this stuff's happening, it's taking stuff down, I'm going to try to shine some light in the world, because people deserve some light going on. You know, don't live in the darkness, and whatever I can do with that. And I was like, you got to do it.
Yeah, it's a shame. I heard that as well about some of these people, and it's a shame because I always felt like gaming was an escape from that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it goes back to choosing your friends carefully, right? And the people you hang out with. And,
very true.
You know, it's what we try to teach our daughters. Like, you know, you have value. Do not discount your own value and let other people do that to you. And that was one of the great things I found about the gaming community I had, was that people really appreciated the folks around them and the people who play this. It's a good, for the most part, group of people. But there's always bad actors. There's always bad.
Yeah, I mean, no one's going to be perfect. But I agree. I always found, for me, it was a case of, and this is probably a terrible way to put it, and if so, I apologize. But I kind of felt like it was gaming was a thing that a bunch of us misfits who didn't really belong elsewhere.
Exactly.
We could be misfits together.
Exactly.
And we were okay, right? We were the island
like
of misfit
stories. It was like your high school drama club, right? They were misfits, but they were actors, and they were sort of more extroverted. You know, war gaming is for introverts, right? Who want to delve deep into something. You know, we attracted this great group of people, and in some aspects, it was our better selves. We really had a great time, and it taught me a lot. You know, there are definitely important life lessons. I remember one life lesson I go back to all the time, and I tell people, I'm like, don't charge the machine gun nest. I learned that in Squad Leader playing Adrian. If you charge the machine gun nest in Squad Leader, your unit will get wiped out, right? In life, don't charge the machine gun nest. Don't do stupid things over and over again, because the outcome will always... And it was. Adrian kicked my ass. It pissed me off, but I learned.
My version of that was with Black Powder doing... I think it was American Civil War. No, it wasn't. I don't know what it was, but I had cavalry. And I charged infantry. I know better than that, but I charged infantry because I said, this will be cool. It was exciting. It did not go well. Don't charge infantry.
Yeah, never charge the infantry square. It's a bad idea.
Oh, yeah, you don't do that. No, you don't.
But you're like, I can break the square. I'm going to break that square. No, you're not. Your unit is going to get munched.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the joy of wargaming. To me, it provides great lessons that if you're lucky, you get to use in real life. If not, you just have a good time playing wargaming.
Yeah, either way, it's a good thing.
It is. It is.
And as we've talked about, you can form some really solid friendships and relationships and things that carry you through the years. And I know for me, Adrian will be with me always, a very important part of me.
Yeah, I tend to agree as well. I think there are parts of me. As I said, I deeply regret not being able to reconnect, but at the same time, I treasure the time that we had together, and I felt really fortunate. So, you know, you try to take the best of it, and you move on, and you do the best you can.
Absolutely. No, those are good lessons for everyone, no matter what your situation happens to be. I know we're winding down now, so I just want to ask, are there any... ways for people to keep up to date with like things you're doing with the record store, or are you looking for people to play games with, or
I mean, I've got a small group of people I play games with. I lead a much smaller life. I would love to connect with you guys at a convention, see what's going on.
Yeah,
but you know, for the most part, my days of putting myself out there are over, and I'm fortunate I don't have to do that anymore.
That's kind of nice, actually.
It is really nice. You know, the record store, if anyone finds himself up in Connecticut, it's outside Hartford in a town called Vernon. It's called Paul's Boutique Records. And we sell used vinyl, right? It's not rocket science. We're not curing cancer. We do have a lot of good music. That's my plug. That's my selfless plug for the record
store. No, that sounds really good. And when you say not having to put yourself out there, that sounds so really good to me. I've scaled back a lot of my being put out there, except for what I do for the podcast, just because I don't have the bandwidth for it anymore. I used to do a lot of that. I used to be in politics and all the and kids and everything. I'm just like, I'm keeping it local.
Yeah, it's emotionally too difficult for me. I don't have to deal with that. You know.
Yeah, it's hard, and I'm trying to make life less hard.
Exactly. Life is hard enough on its own. There's no reason to make it more difficult.
No. So That sounds good. I think people should check out Paul's Boutique Records in Vernon, Connecticut. Apparently, it opens 10 a.m. on Tuesdays, it looks like.
Yeah. 10 to 5, Tuesday through Friday, noon to 6. We're getting our website. We're on eBay. Yeah. People don't want to hear.
Of course they do, because we're going to put it in the show notes and do a little promotion for that. No, this is what we do. I was talking with my buddy Anthony, actually, as a diversion, and he's big into Lego, and I'm going with him and his two sons and his nephew. We're going in August to Virginia, just outside of D.C., to there's a big Lego convention. I'm going to cover it here on the show. Mm-hmm. First time announcing that, and because I'm getting a lot of Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars nerd. Getting a lot of Star Wars stuff to do a Star Wars Lego war game. Oh. And so got to cover it on the show and do a whole thing and that kind of stuff. Going to have him on. But I was talking about all this and I said, you know, I could put stuff on and like I could sell like Lego, for example, whatever, through the podcast. And so I actually at one point when, as a quick side story, when my wife and I were engaged and I was trying to find money to pay for a honeymoon. I had mentioned on the podcast that I had this big collection of Axis and Allies miniatures, land World War II stuff that I didn't want anymore and I was going to sell. And this company had heard it on the podcast. They made me an offer, and that's how I paid for the honeymoon.
That's awesome.
And so this kind of stuff happens.
Where'd you go?
Oh, we took a cruise to the Bahamas.
Nice.
It was first time out of the country. It was wonderful. For a Navy brat, it's unusual for me to say it was first time out of the country, but... It was delightful.
Everyone has to have a first trip.
Yeah, no, but you can do all sorts of stuff through this, and I've been very blessed in many ways.
That's awesome. That's great, and that's the way you should look at it. That's awesome.
But if anyone wants to keep up to date with what we're doing here at Wargaming Recon, you can check us out on all the socials as Wargaming Recon. We're on the Facebook, the Twitter, on Insta. Or as the kids, I think, call it, the gram. I might be wrong about that. I'm old now, so I don't quite remember. Ask your youngsters what they call it these days. We don't do the TikTok or whatever the other stuff. I'm scaling back. But we're everywhere. You can find us on all the things as Wargaming Recon. And check us out on all that kind of stuff. Alex, it has been absolutely delightful to have you here today. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Really, I mean it.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on the show. It was really nice to reminisce about Adrian. And I miss him, and people remember him and can bring a smile to his face. That makes me happy.
Yeah, I think he never really understood it, but he left a mark on a lot of people, and there are many ways that he's being remembered both inside and outside of the tabletop gaming community. And actually, we're doing an upcoming show with a guy who owns a game company in Connecticut, Things from the Basement, makes these beautiful MDF terrain and things, and he created a Victorian science fiction, think Jules Verne-esque submarine, USS Adrian Benson. He's going to be talking about the design process for the USS Adrian Benson and how it was done. And
that's awesome.
Games that Adrian and I are now part of. And it's an amazing world. But things that we'll cover on the show. And I can't thank you enough for everything, really, Alex. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
I just want to thank everyone else for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I appreciate you welcoming us into your daily schedules and hope you enjoy this episode. Don't forget to listen to whatever episodes we have coming out soon. We do our twice a month release schedule. You can check us out. You can see us on all the things, Wargaming Recon. Hope you enjoy this. Listen to the archives. Check stuff out. And remember, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking, should I really be playing Boot Hill or Campaign from North Africa? You know that you gotta. You need to. You have to. That's right. Keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2021 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, we'd like to thank 3DDZYN at 3ddesign.com, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, and Things from the Basement, where you can get highly detailed laser cut terrain kits for 28, 20, and 15 millimeter figures and other exciting products. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so much for your support and being part of our community. We hope you are enjoying the 2021 season.